All right, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Just briefly want to point out this work was also done at Eurocom and the UC Santa Barbara together with people from the Indiana University at Bloomington. So I will start off with a short motivation. So the question is, why do we propose yet another malware detection scheme? I mean, there's already a couple of schemes out there that try to detect this big problem of malware that we have today. The first one is what probably most antivirus companies use today, is binary signatures. I'm not getting into this problem here because we all know what the problem is. It's really concealment, it's packing and so on, and it's an arms race, but it's pretty much a lost battle. So a second scheme we have in use today are network-based detections. But just like the binary signatures, these detection schemes are easily available. The problem is that those systems usually scan for certain artifacts in the communication between a command and control server and the malware on a host. So if the malware tries to blend the malicious traffic into benign traffic, it's very hard to detect it. And furthermore, if the communication is encrypted, that pretty much thwarts detection. So what our basis was when starting off with this work is really try not to rely on certain artifacts, if it's in the communication or in the binary itself. Rather focus on a more generic behavior that you can see in the execution. So like I said, we try to detect malware behavior. And so why behavior? Well, very simple. Behavior is very hard to obfuscate. Behavior is also very hard to randomize. And as we saw in our evaluation, behavior is to some sort also very stable across malware variants. So if a new variant of a malware family comes out, it might have part of the previous behavior inside its body. So we might even detect new variants, although we haven't seen them yet. So behavior-based approaches have gained some attention over the last couple of years. So this is not new, what we're saying. But despite their promising detection results, we haven't really seen a lot of detectors out there that focus on behavior detection, simply because we have a big performance issue there. So when we see the two approaches here, binary signatures on the one hand and behavior detection on the other, we see that we have a big, big advantage on the binary signature side when it comes to efficiency. But we have this huge problem of evasion. On the other hand, we have the behavior detection, which has really good effectiveness when detecting malicious programs. However, usually we have some kind of a special environment that is the basis for the behavior detection. So this could be some CPU support, like an emulation engine that offers taint. So what we do in our work is we try to bring this behavior detection and really blend out the negative effects that we have seen so far. So we try to take the efficiency of running a detection system on a real host without any special support by the CPU or a taint emulator and bring the behavior detection there. So this way we can kind of combine the two positive effects into one detection scheme. So let me outline the rest of my talk. I just gave a short motivation for our work, and in the first section I will talk about detecting behavior. So what is behavior that we can try to detect? And I will give a motivating example, which is the agent malware. Afterwards, I will talk about how we can match behavior graphs, which are the essential key points of how we map or how we describe malicious behavior. Of course, I will also talk about how we can extract those behavior graphs. And with every detection approach, we of course have to evaluate it in terms of performance, but also on how well we can detect malicious programs. So let's look at behavior. So when we talk about behavior, what is behavior? I mean, what are characteristics, things that malicious programs try to do when they run on an end host? Well, the first thing is, of course, manifest on the system. So if you have a program that's running, you, of course, want to be restarted after program startup. So you can either overwrite certain files or set registry keys. But the second thing that you want to try to do is conceal from being detected. So you rename yourself as an executable, like an antivirus product, or even as a system service like svchost.exe. And of course, one of the big goals of malicious programs is, of course, replication. So either sending out email, exploiting services on the LAN, or simply copying the malicious program onto USB drives or Samba shares. Okay, so this is a very general overview of our system. Our detection is based on execution characteristics, like I said. So the first thing that we do when we get an unknown program, we simply put it into our sandbox, which is called Anubis. So in Anubis, we run this executable and monitor the interaction of the program with the operating system. So we can see which system calls are called, and to a certain degree, we also can see certain API calls. We perform a very detailed taint analysis that allows us to find certain behaviors in the program. And in the next step, we try to extract what we call detection graphs. So for a detection graph is some kind of a behavior that leads into a security-relevant system call or a system activity. So when we talk about security-relevant system activity, we mean creating new processes, doing communication over the network, or overwriting files, for example. So using this taint, we can also include certain system calls that are related to our security-relevant system call. So for example, if you write to a file, a related system call might be opening this file. A related system call might also be opening a second file and copying data from the first to the second file. So when we have those detection graphs, we can later use them on a real host that does not have any tainting or any special CPU to detect the same behavior again. So we do this by logging all the system calls that are executed by an unknown binary and try to match those system calls against our behavior graph. Now, of course, this is a very broad overview, but I will get into all the details in the next 20 minutes. So let's take an example here. So the example I will describe on the next slide is taken from the agent malware, which is a Trojan horse. And what agent does during its startup? It tries to manifest on the system. For this, it simply maps a part of the binary image onto the heap of the program. And actually, the part that it maps there is an encrypted payload that it tries to execute later. So what it does, it maps this payload onto the heap and uses a proprietary decryption routine, which is based on XOR, to simply decrypt this payload and later write it into a system file. The system file in this case is located in C Windows System 32 drivers ip6fw.sys. And what it will later do, actually, is restart the Windows XP integrated firewall. So by doing this, it turns itself into a very stealthy, very powerful system service that probably even a security specialist would not really detect. So we will now switch over to a taint perspective of the behavior that we just saw. This is a behavior graph that we would see in Anubis. So the first thing the program does, it calls the API called getModuleFileName, which just returns the name of the current executed image. It will then open this file and call anti-create section and anti-mapview section. For those of you who are not familiar with the Windows XP internals, this is nothing else than mapping part of a file onto the heap, or basically onto any given address. So on the second part here, you see creating a second file, which is this firewall service file, and later writing to the file. So we can see the dependencies between those system calls because we have tainting. Especially, we see a dependency between the mapped view, the mapped buffer on the heap being written to the second file. So therefore, we can already in Anubis take this behavior graph and simply match it because there we have tainting and we can clearly see dependencies between all the system calls. So let us now switch to a real system where we don't have Anubis, where we don't have any tainting. And let's see how this behavior graph can be detected there. So the first thing that we will see is getModuleFileName is not a system call. So from a system perspective, we don't see it. And there are actually multiple ways of getting your own image. A second thing that we will not see is the dependency on the bottom right, which is decrypting the buffer that was mapped onto heap and writing it to the firewall file, simply because the data that is mapped onto the heap and the buffer that is written to file, they don't have any similarity. I mean, maybe they have the same size, but not even that must be true. So from a system perspective, we don't see this dependency here. The other dependencies, of course, we can see, because those are based on handles. And of course, if I open a file and I want to write to this file, I have to use the same handle. So those can be detected very easily. So what we can see with this behavior graph now is that it splits into two smaller behavior graphs. The one is opening a file and mapping it onto the heap, and the second one is opening a specific file and writing it to it later. Now, if you know the PE internals of Windows, the left-hand side is simply starting a binary, because if you want to load a PE and run the program, you, of course, have to map it onto some address location. So this is present in every single executable. So we can't use it for detection, or we can use it, but it's simply no information. So what we're left here from a pretty specific behavior graph is just two nodes, which is opening a file and writing there. This can be used for detection, obviously. So summing up this detecting behavior, we see that, well, we can do detection on behavior, but the problem here is we need dependencies between all system calls. So we need to see dependencies between all nodes of our behavior graph. We have handle dependencies, which work because there is a direct propagation of the value, but they are insufficient for detection. And the problem is the behavior graphs fall apart into trivial subgraphs that can't be used anymore. And for the data dependencies, like the decryption routine on the bottom right of the graph, well, we saw that was kind of convenient to have this dependency for generating the behavior graph in the first place, but it's absolutely necessary to have it for doing detection. Okay. So let's now get a little bit more into the details of how we do matching of behavior graphs. What we saw, we can match behavior by using taint propagation. That works, but the problem, as I pointed out, is pretty obvious. We have a huge performance overhead simply because we need this extended emulation engine. I mean, a system emulator, that is one thing, but having a system emulator that does taint propagation, that is a huge performance impact. Also, we have a problem of memory overhead. We don't need only the RAM that is offered to the operating system, but you also need a second memory, which is a shadow memory, that stores taint labels that are associated with certain memory regions. So this is pretty much not applicable to a production system or just any end host, because it's too slow. So we need to find a way to maintain those dependencies, and that is any kind of dependencies, without taint propagation. And that's actually what our work is all about. So the first kind of dependency, I've talked about it pretty much, is handle dependencies. We have direct value propagation, and when I talk about handles, that need not only be handles in the casual sense, but it's just some system-provided identifier. This could be a file, a section, or a process handle, but it could also be a registry key. You can't simply change a registry key when you're referring to a certain entry. But it's also true for socket identifiers. The program must use the same value, and we can use that for detection. But of course, there's the second dependency that we need, which is data dependency. And this can be arbitrary data or control dependencies between two system calls. So this dependency might take some value and modify the content of the value and simply use it then in a later system call. So our proposal for overcoming or for detecting this dependency is what we call anticipate precise call arguments. So here's what we do. When we execute the program and see a certain behavior in Anubis, we simply record the execution semantics of this behavior. So from this, we can extract propagation or so-called manipulation formulas that tell us how is a value transformed between two system calls. And we can later use those propagation formulas to emulate taints between two system calls A and B. So think of it this way. On a real host, we see system call A, and what we do in our system, we simply log the outgoing parameters of this system call. In our example of agent, this would be mapping a certain portion of the file onto the heap. So we know that data. We then use that data as input to our propagation formulas and simply predict what we think would be the input parameter to the later system call B. So when we actually see the system call B, we can simply take the incoming arguments and compare them to our predicted values. And if we see that both values are the same, then our prediction of this data dependency held. So let's look at it again from the agent example. Here I have marked all the dependencies between system calls, and in green we see handle dependencies. So here we don't need to do anything special. So when we use this behavior graph for detecting the behavior, we can see certain system calls coming in, and using the handle dependencies, we can basically mark certain portions of the graph as already seen. Now, if we mark the whole graph, we can see, well, the whole behavior has been matched, and this is the agent malware. So now, say, we have seen all the nodes in this graph, so that's why I made them bold, and the only thing that's left for detection is this last node, this anti-write file. So let us zoom in there a little bit and see how our propagation formulas can help us find this dependency. So we previously saw the anti-map view of section, and we stored the outgoing parameters, which were, in this case, the buffer and the buffer size. I call it M underline buffer and M underline size in this case. We also previously saw the anti-create file, which provided us with a handle of the open file. So what we can do now is we use our propagation formula, we call it F4 here, and provide it with the input of the previous system call, which is M buffer and M size. And we calculate the predicted buffer and the predicted buffer size. So when we later see the anti-write file system calls, we have three incoming arguments, which are the file handle, the buffer, and the buffer size, which I call W handle, W buffer, and W size here. So then we can say, well, if the handle that we have on this dependency on the left matches the write file, and also the predicted buffer and the predicted buffer size match what we actually saw, well, then this dependency held, and we can confirm the dependency between those system calls and mark anti-write file as having been seen. And this way, the whole behavior graph has been matched, and we can trigger an alert because we have seen the behavior that we previously recorded. Okay, so now let's get into the details of extracting behavior graphs, because that's really the big thing here. So this is how the whole process works. In the first step, like I said, we have the malicious binary, and we just throw it into Anubis. Now, the Anubis sandbox will record all the instructions that were executed by the malicious program. So this way, we basically defeat any packer, because we don't, in our analysis at all, rely on the binary program itself. So we only depend on data that we actually logged during the execution in Anubis. But we also log other things, like the program flow, for each thread inside the program that will help us later. Additionally, we log all the memory accesses that the threads are doing. So this way, we can do a detailed analysis later. Like I mentioned previously, we also do precise taint propagation. By precise taint propagation, I mean we not only log data dependencies, but also control dependencies. And we also know which instructions of the program accessed or modified tainted data. And we can also, using those dependencies, we can already see which system call provides tainted data to later system calls. So we call later system calls the sinks that consume tainted data, and the first calls the sources of the taint information. So in the second step, we just scan the logs for the security-relevant behavior. In this step, we simply provide our tool with a list of system calls that we think is interesting. So this would be writing to a file, spawning new process, and so on. And then we extract the behavior graphs matching the behavior. So we start off by this interesting system call X and simply link in all the system calls that are somehow connected to X. And using detaint, we can already also map in the edges into the graph, and we can label certain edges as being handle dependencies because we know that it's direct propagation. Now, for all other kinds of dependencies, we call our tool, which is called Slicer, to extract the propagation formulas. Now, our slicer is nothing else than a program, than a binary program slicer that resolves Death's use chains. So say we have system call X, and we want to find out how are the input arguments encoded for the system call. So we simply start at the system call invocation using our logs and iterate backwards, including all instructions into the transformation formula that provide or manipulate data there. We use static analysis, however, on code that we dynamically extracted, and we are helped by our memory logs, we are helped by the program flow logs, and also by the taint logging. Actually, in later versions of our slicer, we don't even need the tainting anymore, simply because we have with memory access logs, we can really find all the instructions necessary for this propagation. In a later optional step, we can also simplify the transformation formulas if they're very simple, so we don't need a very complex way of encoding those formulas. So in the last step, we simply embed those transformation formulas into DLL so our scanner can later use it for detection on a real host. And of course, we also label all the graph edges with the transformation formulas so the scanner knows which function to apply to which dependency. So let me get into the details of resolving Death use chains. One source for our Death use chains are obviously other system calls. For example, this might be the anti-map view of section. So here we replace the system call simply by a stub that is later used by our scanner to provide the data that we currently monitored in the execution and give it to the transformation formula. We also have sources immediate values, for example, if there is a shift. This shift might be just an immediate value or just a push onto the stack. So of course, since we do binary slicing, this is implicitly encoded in the transformation formula. A third thing that we saw that our transformation formulas required were pre-initialized data segments. For example, programs often operate on, for example, strings on the BSS. So here we have a two-sided approach for detection. Either we simply provide the same data that was initially seen in the Anubis execution to the transformation formula, but a second approach is also, since we know the address that the formula is requesting for, we simply inspect the currently running process and just copy out the region around this address. So this way, we might, for instance, have a dynamically changed key for our decryption loop. So our whole thing is really a full automated process. So when we get our behavior graphs, we can later use our scanner to invoke the originally analyzed binary and simply run the scanner against it. So this way, we can already verify if our behavior graphs, which we don't manually change at all, match to the behavior. So let me just quickly get into the evaluation that we did. Obviously, we have to evaluate two things here. First is the effectiveness, since we're claiming to do better than other approaches. And of course, since this could be, you know, heavy computation, we also had to evaluate the efficiency, of course. So for the effectiveness, we simply took six current threads or thread families and identified them using standard antivirus labels. And as you can see, for example, we took all APL. Now, for each family, we took 50 different variants and tried to generate behavior graphs. So as you might think, you know, we should be able to generate behavior graphs for each sample that we got. Well, the problem, we don't always come to 100% efficiency here. Effectiveness here. Is simply because sometimes we could not observe malicious behavior inside our Anubis sandbox. This could have multiple reasons. Either our sandbox is missing certain DLLs, the program detected our sandbox, or simply it had a timeout and didn't do anything before an hour elapsed. So here we just couldn't extract graphs. But as you can already see, we have the variants that the antivirus told us there are, and we have our variants. So you can see, for example, the MyDoom family had 32 different variants on the antivirus side. but we only needed 12 different behavior graphs to match all of the 94% of our samples. So we already see behavior is a lot more generic than just standard binary signatures. And also we encountered zero false positives because our behavior graphs are pretty specific. It is very unlikely that a benign program will have the same effect on the system than our malware. So now we did a second experiment where we said, let's take another 50. I mean, as you can see, for MyTOP, we simply did not, no, sorry, for Netsky, we simply didn't have enough variants. But let's try to detect new variants. So here we have an average of 63%, which is not good as the initial 92% on average. But if we split this into the two sections, which is basically variants that we saw during the training phase and variants that are completely new, we, on the one hand, known variants, we get back to our above 90% detection. But for variants that we have never seen, which might encode different behavior, we can match every fourth of these variants without ever having seen them in our training phase. I think that's pretty good. So for the efficiency, we did two things. We took IO-bound and CPU-bound computation. For instance, we took Internet Explorer, but we also took the Visual Studio C++ compiler. And we have, for most cases, well below 10% overhead. As you can see, we have almost 40% overhead for the Visual Studio. Now, if you want to know the details of this, we have some detailed analysis in our paper, because that turned out to be the worst case here. And I'm happy to take a question on this later, but I think I'll just get to the end of my talk now. So summing up, I hope we saw that behavior can be detected. And it can be detected simply by monitoring system calls. So it can be detected from a system perspective. And we simply all need to do is link graph nodes. So the problem is we have two kinds of dependencies, handle dependencies, which are easily handled, and data dependencies that, well, need a little more attention, but can be handled as well. So our proposed solution was anticipating future column arguments by extracting propagation formulas. So for the evaluation, I hope we showed that it's fast enough for using the system on a real host without any special CPU support. And our approach is intrinsically robust against any polymorphism or metamorphism because we don't care what the binary looks like. We just want to know what it does. And also, to some extent, we saw that behavior graphs are usable across malware variants. So even if a new variant comes out, we might be able to detect it. So with this, I finish my talk, and I'm happy to take any questions you might have.
Yeah, we have time for a couple of questions. Please step to the microphone. And state your name and affiliation, please.
Hi there. I'm Tim Ebringer. I'm from the Microsoft Anti-Malware Group. I guess the problem with some of the behavior-based detections over the years has been the false positive rate. It's quite hard to distinguish the behavior of, say, installers from malicious behavior. And I noticed that most of your experiments were on worms. Pretty much most of the malware that we get today, a lot of it is really Trojans. I wonder if you've had much, if you've done any tests for false positives with stuff like the AutoIT based families. We're getting a lot of malware which is like based on AutoIT, which is a systems testing. It's like a GUI interface tester. And it does a lot of creating processes and clicking buttons and writing into files. But we're also getting malware based off AutoIT just in the script. It downloads stuff and runs it. I wonder if you've tested your system against this kind of stuff.
Well, since we wrote the paper, we have actually done a lot of investigation into that direction. So all this downloading new samples, for example, is very specific that we can detect and is actually very interesting into looking into, well, how does this Trojan download certain things? And those things are very often very precisely matchable. For example, they download certain specific URLs where they have in the URL encoded like their ID. And if we can predict this ID using propagation formulas, we can say definitely, well, this is this variant. And so we have a lot of ongoing research into that direction. And it's very interesting. And I hope maybe you will like our follow-up paper if it ever comes out. Okay. Thanks for the question.
I'm Arnold Tutubay at Binghamton University. Kazas questions. You said you have zero false positives, right?
Yep.
And for example, you get blind binary and you get behavioral graphs from that. and you get, for example, several behavioral graphs, right?
Kind Sorry, of could individual. You repeat
that? How many behavioral graphs you get from one binary, from one malware?
Yeah.
It could be several, right? Or is just one huge graph which shows the whole behavior from the running to the end of the malware?
No, we extract multiple behavior graphs for a single malware. Okay. But we can use every single one for detection.
So when you flag the alert, if all the graphs match to the current activity of the binary, right?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Maybe let's take this offline and take one more quick question from the back.
Yeah, I'll be happy to take it afterwards. Yeah. Well, as you saw, we don't have a 100% detection rate on our experiments, and that is exactly one of the problems that we have. We must see certain behavior inside Anubis for it to be detected later. But we have a lot of different ongoing research where we should try to detect or, first of all, conceal Anubis from being detected, but also, you know, getting those CNC into the malware. And that's a good point. We have to see behavior before we can match it. But there's a lot of ongoing research since the Anubis project is now getting pretty big. And whoever is working on it helps us improve our system. But that's true. Yeah, we first have to see it, of course.
All right. Let's thank the speaker.